council meeting for Tuesday, March the 10th, 2020 is hereby called order at 9 a.m. I would like to welcome everyone here this morning. And I would please ask if you have any electronics, if you turn them to the silent mode. I have no changes or additions to the agenda today. Are there any changes or additions? Hearing none, a motion to accept the agenda as circulated would be in order. Moved by Deputy Mayor Kelly, seconded by Councilor Johnson. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Under 3.0 presentations, we have 3.1 today, RCMP report. We have Staff Sergeant Dan Archibald and Senior Safety Coordinator Shelley Walker. And I would ask if you would both come to the presentation desk, please.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So I haven't seen you since November, so just go over some details as what we've been up to since we last spoke. We'll entertain some questions afterwards, of course, and go from there. I brought Shelley with me today. She can speak on the senior safety aspect of things a little better than I can. So as far as personnel goes at the detachment, we continue to be fully staffed. We've got a new detachment assistant started this past 2 weeks, so she's full-time. We've got two assistants full-time now, 10 constables, 2 corporals, and myself, and of course Shelley with senior safety. I guess since I last spoke to you, we've had a few incidences. I've tried to put more into my report just for interest. Sometimes what may not be interesting to me is interesting to other people, but I can speak on a few of them here. I'll just go over them briefly. I won't read them word for word or nothing. But I guess the biggest thing that happened, one of the bigger things that happened was in early January, a high-risk offender was released from a federal prison, serving a 20-year prison sentence for a violent aggravated incident. We were kind of behind the eight ball on it. Usually what happens when an offender gets released from serving a federal sentence, the province is notified. The way this happened, this person was released through New Brunswick and transferred to a lower risk facility in Nova Scotia, and then was released, so a few alarms didn't go off for the province, and when he knocked on our door is when the alarm kind of went off for us. When that happened, of course, we reached out to folks at Ottawa to release. You kind of have to weigh public interest and the Privacy Act when it comes to these types of things. So it was assessed, and that was put out there the next day that this person was residing in our area under a court-ordered conditions upon his release. So that includes a curfew. So what we did was we came out with a surveillance plan, and we did that surveillance plan for a month, which involved basically sitting on the house until his curfew hours were in effect. And then it was phased or reduced over the weeks that followed. It was quite a... It's quite a lot for one detachment to handle at two positions sitting on a house all day. I encourage them to run some traffic while they're up there in South Brookfield and stay in the area, which happened. But that's something we continue to monitor, and the curfew conditions are, I could assure you, they're checked every night. This individual's checked on, and if he's not checked on, then I need some articulation why. I've asked the members. Sometimes it's weather or whatever it may be, you know. But that's something we continue to closely monitor. It just is what it is. There's not much else. I entertain calls from folks in North Queens on the weekly about it, and we'll continue to take those calls and ensure we're doing what we can. We've had another fatal MVC motor vehicle collision, unfortunately, this past month. That was early February. In that incident, it was a head-on collision involving a semi-truck and a truck, and alcohol wasn't a factor in the collision. We're still waiting on reports from traffic analysts to figure out or try and determine what the exact cause was, but early it looked like the vehicle just veered into the opposite opposing lane. It's our second fatal motor vehicle in Queens County this year. We had an incident. It was just a domestic incident in which we had someone, a flight from police or a run from police. So we got called to an apartment to investigate a domestic violence, and short struggle ensued after a foot chase, and the individuals apprehended and arrested and released shortly after breached those conditions and was arrested again. There's been some changes to Bill C-75, which it kind of it changes our arrest and release procedures a little bit as police. Basically, what the courts are saying, in summary, is that they're not wanting us to hold individuals on these breach or these charges where they're failing to abide by their conditions, unless it's more of a personal crime, like a personal breach, like a contact order, whereas opposed to if the individual's found drinking or a curfew, they're asking us not to initially hold and have a remand hearing where they're brought before a judge. So then this is when stuff like this happens. The person reoffends, and then once there's repetition, that's kind of when we're engaged to hold that person. So just some minor changes. You're just more aware of it, but this is what we're coming across. So it's all new to us, too. Just on a random day here, this is something that folks probably don't hear about too often, but our street crime enforcement unit out of Bridgewater one day called us just randomly to assist in a traffic stop. An individual was pulled over, had $20,000 worth of money, believed to be involved in the believed to be involved in the drug trafficking trade. So that was seized and charges pending with that one. That was right here, just at the highway exit onto 103. Another incident. These are things we're putting out into the media release too. If my first meeting here, my goal was to try and put more things out to the media. Which we have been doing, in large part thanks to Corporal Rob Frizzell, who is our new corporal within the last 6 months. He was the media liaison for Great Northwest Territories during his time there. So when I found that out, I kind of made that his baby. Like, if you have something that you think is newsworthy, let's put it out. He's been doing that. One of those incidents was just a few weeks ago. We had there's a business up in Greenfield, and we had a report that an employee gave butter laced with cannabis oil to one of his co-workers. So that was something that the individual was spoken to at length, and charges we were contemplating. And overall, I think the complainant didn't wish to pursue any charges, but obviously that's administering a noxious substance, something that's illegal. So just little things that we're putting out into the media. That happens within Queens that most people probably would never know about otherwise, right? Statistics-wise, this is our year end, so March 31st would be considered our year end, and then it all starts over as far as initiatives and goals for us, and budget-wise as well. So thus far this year, we've had 16 impaired drivers, which is above and beyond what we've had in previous years. Fortunately, we're catching them. We've had 5 additional license suspensions due to alcohol or drugs, and we've gotten 6 prohibited drivers now on the road. We've got one just as early as last week. we've done over 54 check stops now. We've been tracking those and getting out on the roadways at usually nighttime and just having a station there and with a couple vehicles and having our lights on and just checking sobriety and licenses of all drivers. We'll continue to do that in this upcoming fiscal year. Our tickets thus far, it says 313 here, I checked before I left, we're at 339 tickets for the year. That's on pace to pass our goals for the year for tickets, so that's good. Our members are out there writing tickets. I know the hot spots in town, which are concerns to brought up by council, the three-way stop on Bristol and Main, and we continue to write tickets there. They're not a high quantity, I will say that. There are some difficulties, like I say. It is something that the weather's warming up now, and I'm aware of it. I'm going to try and get our members to do another blitz there, if you will. I'll put it out into the public as well through media and channels and hope to deter or to help citizens abide by the rules. Just a reminder, you know, watch for pedestrians, come to complete stops. No angled parking, all those things. It's just something we have to keep putting out there. I think knowledge on it is important, so we'll continue to do that. I have a breakdown of our tickets. I feel like I'm rambling here and talking, but I'm just trying to get it done out of the way. So I've got a breakdown of tickets everyone can see here, like as far as what type of tickets we're issuing. Predominantly are speeding, so 80 speeding tickets of the 313 I've got listed there. And we're doing a lot of warnings as well. There's 180 warnings, so oftentimes that's education, if you will. So we're not just out to get people. We are issuing warnings as well as defect tickets for vehicle 17 there. Calls for service, when the time I wrote this report last week, we're at 2,547 calls for service. And there's a breakdown there that follow. A lot of the crimes are, or reports of crimes, are assaults, 117, harassments or threats, 135, thefts or possession of stolen property, and some mischief, 100, or just around 100 each there. You can just have a look whenever you have time. We get a lot of mental health act calls, 77 calls on the year. And a lot of these calls are just people calling the detachment, whether they report frauds or just some general questions in regards to investigations or assistance, is usually how it goes. But overall crime in Queens County, we've got a crime analyst in Dartmouth who sends reports out to quarterly, just overall crime trends in every county. And in Queens County, as opposed to the previous year, our crimes are down 15%, which is always good. You always want that number to decrease if you can. And in 2019, we had 82 prisoners, which would be considered low, like our detachment cells. 82 prisoners a year in a population of this size is pretty darn good if you look at other statistics across the country. Our community, I won't read too much into our community policing report. It's there for everyone's information. If you ever want me to have Constable Duffy come in, he'd gladly come in. He continues to be very active within the community, especially the youth throughout the school months. He's taken, there's a cyber crime prevention committee in Dartmouth where he takes four students or six students quarterly into Dartmouth, and they have a committee there with students from all across the province who sit together and they talk about what today's day and age kids are up to and what problems they come across in regards to, you know, social media and cyber incidences. So it's very beneficial. He continues to do that. He's in the schools every day. Last month he had a bunch of different units from our headquarters come out, and they set up our physical testing. We call it the PEAR test. Few kids went out and ran it and had some fun with it and try to encourage people to become police officers and everything else. So he's very involved in the community, North Queens schools, all across. We do what we can for those to get involved in those schools. We had a basketball game up there a few months ago. I'm still hurting from it. It's been rough. I'm no longer that fella that can do that type of thing, unfortunately. Senior safety, I put this down here just as kind of a segue to start talking about Shelly's job there. She's, and Ron, Constable Duffney there, they had an incident the other day where they were dealing with a 71-year-old senior that was deemed incompetent by adult protection and medical professionals at the time. And inside of her residence was $50,000 cash. It's actually over $50,000, I believe. So we were contacted, and Shirley really dealt with that file, and we were like, well, wow, what do you do when someone has that much cash? And we were able to determine, Shirley was able to determine, public trustee office was contacted, and money was seized, and a bunch of other things happened. But a few things the fact that, well, hey, someone actually called us to tell us that there was that amount of cash in there was great, and then to know how to deal with it. It sure was a benefit having Shirley at our office to deal with that. And I can get into Shelley's report a bit more. Shelley, unless...
Keep going, you're doing well.
You guys better have a bunch of questions for Shelley. She's here today. On the way over, she said, I hope they have lots of questions this time. So between May 1st, 2019 and March 1st, 21 active clients have increased to 69 active clients and growing daily. Many files remain active. Until the client's placed in the long-term care or passes away. Even after clients are placed in long-term care, many of their files remain open due to ongoing family dynamics, as you can imagine. So Shirley works 3 8-hour days per week. In 12 days, months, she averages between 10 to 15 home visits. Many more home visits could be accomplished. However, restraints with part-time hours as well as demographical areas include 49 individual communities required to cover. It's not possible a lot of the times. She's traveled over 4,000 kilometers to date, typically 1 to 2 presentations per month in the community on topics such as frauds or scams, which are extremely popular at the present. Community policing officer works quite often with Shelley in these types of presentations and getting that information out there. Senior abuse, seniors and safe driving, the vial of life, medication safety. Most referrals come into senior safety from the RCMP, adult protection, seniors care health team, continuing care, home support, Western Region Housing Authority, Red Cross, EHS, other senior safety coordinators across the province, self-referrals, neighbors, friends, community members, and the SPCA. So with the number of active files growing, clients having to wait for service, and these numbers are continuously increasing as the program gains recognition. I can tell you Shelley has done a great job since arriving at our detachment. She is, I would say, the most organized individual at our detachment.
You're welcome.
She's been great, she works hard, and if you folks have any questions in regards to her senior safety program, I would encourage you to speak to Shelley on it. We really enjoy having her down there.
So at this point, I think I'll ask counselors if you have any questions of her just yet. Counselor Fancy?
I got multiple, so you can, Mayor, you can stop me when you, if I got 3 or 4 questions.
Okay.
I don't want to take up all the time or anything. The collisions on 103, I noticed that, you know, there's been one fatality, but there's been a lot of accidents. Is there any kind of a common factor? Because I know I've come back from Bridgewater 2 or 3 times where they've had the highway blocked off. Do we see anything that's ongoing as a common factor?
I think the Bridgewater incident was, I believe that was by the, is that the Quick Mart location there? I think that was, I don't know the details on that, but it would be those entry points onto that highway where people are just missing the stop signs and entering the highway, and then a T-bone collision occurs, right? Quite scary,
yes.
Yeah. I can't really speak on that one. I don't know all the details. In our area, I don't think there, like just through Queens County, there hasn't been a whole lot of accidents, but across the province, yes, I follow the news too, and you are seeing quite a few of those collisions. I think the as you get closer to Bridgewater and get into those double lanes where you have those exits, and it makes it a bit safer for sure, but pedestrians do have to, yeah, you got to keep your head up and watch your speeds. And
does that mean maybe the stop signs being painted yellow or hot?
Yeah,
or
that's something.
Ring or something that's kind of fluorescent or something.
Yeah, and that's something the province looks after, and right. when we report those accidents or collisions, we give a GPS coordinate and we send a traffic accident report. It automatically, once we hit send, it gets sent to the province, and they take that data and compile it, and they find the areas in the province where they're finding repetitive accidents occurring, and that's how they analyze it through our reports. That's something that we are required to do to assist the province in traffic analysis. So we'll wait and see if there's a problem area within our county. If I'm noticing it in particular, I'll make a proactive call to the province and try and determine if that can be looked at quicker. Just as of right now, there's no real one particular accident location this past year since I've been here anyway. So something I'll continue to watch.
Because that one there, like you said, somebody getting T-bone, so somebody right through a stop sign, it looks like.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's something that could be looked at.
Yeah, whether it's a light or, but I'm sure the province would gauge it how many times an accident has occurred there. If it was just a one-time deal, you know, it's something they have to weigh, I'm sure.
When you talked about the one offender in particular that came through the back door, so to speak, I know I had gone up at one time about somebody who had moved into to my area, or so to speak, and they had been incarcerated for something that had been done with a young offender, so they had spent the time and then they came out. But Nova Scotia has different laws than Ontario, is what I understand, is that Ontario, they would then put that out that someone, they would let it be known to the community, but in Nova Scotia that we don't.
Well, with this incident, that's exactly what we did do with this individual. I don't know, Nova Scotia does do that, to my knowledge, and that's what we did with this individual. It was something we had to apply for or to articulate in a document that was sent to Ottawa, and I think the section in Ottawa that approves those type of things.
Right.
I mean, certain factors have to be met where privacy public knowledge, public awareness outweighs that privacy.
Right.
So it doesn't happen in every circumstance, but it is something we can apply for. And with that incident, can't speak to it, I wasn't here, but
right.
when I found that out, to me, that's something that I thought should be engaged and looked into, and it was approved and it was sent out. And I think that's probably why most people might have seen it on Facebook before anything else, because we sent it one evening, and the next morning it was out there in social media. It's a pretty big deal to do that when an individual has served their time served their sentence, and then this again kind of brings things up again. It must be hard for that individual, right? So it's something that can't be taken lightly, but it does happen. It does happen through the province. It's consistent in that way.
It is consistent.
I think so, yeah.
Councilor McLeod.
Good morning again, Dan. Thank you for your report, and welcome again, Shelley. So great to have you as a team working together for our community. I have a question and a real serious concern about the cannabis legalization and the fact that it can, and you had indicated in your report that someone had laced butter or whatever with it. And it's a scary situation with our young people and our kids in school. And how can that be addressed in some way that don't take anything from a person that you don't know? I mean, if they've got things that are laced with cannabis, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think as far as we go, a policing aspect of it, or a policing point, or our community policing officer, he does those presentations in the schools as it relates to not just, like, I speak a lot about cybercrime because that's kind of a hot topic, but he does do these presentations on drugs, drug use, and forms of drugs, and not just the cannabis, but the other things that could be laced in food. There are more potent drugs out there that God forbid somebody can get a hold of. So it comes down to education with us. That's really all we can do with it. Putting out little tidbits like this piece of information, that's kind of why we did it, like to let people know. Now that edibles are a thing, this could happen, and if it does happen, it's legal. And if we're able to prove that it happened, you could be charged for it, right? But it also, it comes down to, I'm sure schools are doing education on parenting. Like this is just things that nowadays children should be aware of and taught at an early age.
Constantly, brought to the forefront.
Yeah, I know with my children, They're young kids, but I'm real with them, and I tell them what life is and the unfortunate aspects of it, that there are people out there who choose to make these decisions. It's a small percentage of the population that do these things. That's good, but there is a population there, unfortunately, that choose to do that. So
there was a situation in BC not long ago with a young boy that his drink was laced with whatever, and it caused his death. And there's a young woman that lives locally here, and she came talking about how can we get that point across, because that's a real serious situation. How can we get that message out to our communities and small communities that it's a real serious situation, and this really did result in fatal death. So.
Yeah, the importance of it is huge. I mean, it doesn't take much to...
And
to
the places where kids hang out, like the skate parks and the places where there's a congregation of young people, so.
Yeah, that's right. We'll continue doing what we can within the community with the youth. I think it's, like you said,
education is the key.
Education's huge, and just getting those points across, and getting other agencies into, like the professionals who deal with the drug enforcement. We've had them out during that presentation Constable Duffy had. So all we can do is try and educate and hope for the best with these children and parenting and everything else. So.
On another topic, the traffic radar, the system where you, speed control system, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
In Sandy Cove, and, well, we still refer to Sandy Cove, Brooklyn Road, between, Brady's Building Supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes from a, it's a 50 kilometer, but people are lacing through there 60, 70, sometimes 80. Is it possible to have that situated in that, positioned in that place at some point in the future?
Yes, I've spoken with one of our members has kind of taken the initiative or the lead on that one, and we've made a couple attempts throughout this winter to get it, and it's been in use.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's a shared device,
yes,
with Bridgewater, but I'll make efforts and to get it there. I guess the second or third request I've had to put it in that location now, so
okay.
That would probably be the location in between, you say, Brady's and the lights
in Bristol.
Okay. Okay,
between that long stretch there, it goes through.
Yeah, that's something that I'll do that today. I'll go back and try and request that for a certain time period, as long as we can get it, usually,
mm-hmm.
until they start calling and wanting it back.
Okay, great, thank you.
Should cover the mic when I say that.
Councilor Frehlich.
Good morning. I just had a question about distracted driving. How hard is it to hand out fines for people that are texting driving? Because we see it daily.
Yeah.
People with their head down, driving,
yeah,
no matter where it is, on the highway or on the, you know, you down at the three-way stop. So
yeah.
Is it challenging to prove that, or is it just, because I only see 6 years.
Yeah, there's a challenge to it. A lot of times, when you're in a marked police vehicle, people tend to notice you a bit more. So, as like today, I'm in an unmarked, and I could come up along beside somebody and catch them in the act easy enough. We only have one unmarked police vehicle, but having said that, if an individual has their head down and their phone's on their lap and you don't see the phone, it's without getting a close look, it's hard to say without a certainty or without a doubt that they were looking at a cell phone. And recently, we've only had a few tickets with that. That's something that our Southwest Nova District would like to see more of, is distracted driving tickets. So perhaps that's something this upcoming year we can try and increase. 6 would be considered low, I would think. At the same time, I know there's been recent, it's not case law, but incidents that have gone through the court where they've allowed a phone to be utilized as a GPS. So if you're using your phone as for directional purposes, like a GPS screen, it's been thrown out of court. So there are some difficulties in trying to get a conviction with that, but at the same time, texting or talking on your cell phone's still distracted driving, right? So that's something we can look at trying to increase this upcoming year, for sure.
Thank you.
Councilor Johnson?
Okay.
Well,
one of the things with the texting thing, and the use of the phone, they can be time-stamped. Is that something that you can actually take the phone and double-check that the last time the call was made or something like that, or is that just not legal to do that?
Yeah, I think there's more we don't have as many authorities under the Motor Vehicle Act as we would do for criminal code, like checking someone's phone. So that's another difficult. And I'm not the most educated on that either.
I just know that helped me. I was accused of doing that.
Yeah.
To prove on the phone that the phone wasn't used during the last half hour.
Yeah, so that would be good. That would be a good defense.
Yeah, no. Anyway, that's not the question I had. My question, I think, is more for Shelley, and I know that we had an unofficial request come forward to the region about this whole issue with adult safety not being available nights and weekends, and that, to me, just means that one of you two are getting those calls when there's concern. Can you speak more to that?
Well, adult protection only works Monday to Friday from 8 until 4. And so after that time, what happens is you call the intake line, the toll-free number, and they tell you to call 911, which ends up back with the RCMP. So with the case that I had been working on that you're aware of, my board has gone ahead and written a letter to the Minister of Health, and also Kim Masland is taking it upon herself to see what she can do as well to try and get at least somebody who's on call under the AP division to make sure that somebody is always available to go on these calls. I mean, we don't only have mental health calls from 8 till 4, Monday, Friday. Most of the calls are coming in after those hours in the evening and on the weekends. And in the particular case that I had, it happened on a Friday night into a Saturday morning. And so I got called. I had to call the RCMP. I had to call EHS. There was a lot of different services that had to be called that day. So I guess to sum it up, Adult Protection is going to, I guess they're going to look at things and see what they can do to maybe provide a service in the after hours.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you both for the service, too. So.
Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I wanted to talk to you, Dan, about the traffic report. And overall, when you said that there were 16 charges laid for impaired driving, and that was more than you'd seen in the past, but there's 80 speeding tickets and 112 collisions. Just in your opinion, where does your focus lie on that? I mean, 80 speeding tickets, is it the number of tickets and that creates the concern, or is there an issue or area that points out to you that you'd spend more time? Is there a strategy in place to sort of deal more with one or other of those issues?
To me, the way I kind of see it, you can go out any day of the week and you can get speeding tickets on these highways. It's like that everywhere across the country. The speed limits are 100 or in our area predominantly, and it's so easy to speed. So it's something that we can, those numbers will always be high. It depends how active we are in that area. There is a danger associated with speed, obviously, these collisions that are happening. There's nothing alarming to me about the numbers. If anything, those numbers can increase, and that's what I hope to do in the next year with speeding. The impaired enforcement, I don't think the impaireds have increased or decreased for the general public overall in recent years. I think enforcement of it is what's increased in the last year. You know, I think last year we might have had 12. This year we have 16. So it's not a huge jump there. It's just four more instances. It could be a matter of reporting or whatnot. But I think just your police being proactive in certain areas helps improve or those statistics. So when I go, like April 1st is our new fiscal and I'm setting new initiatives and whatnot, like our ticket numbers, we're gonna continue to increase because we've met our goal. We've increased it from last year. So I'm not gonna tell everyone, well, let's slack off in that area. We're gonna try and increase it like we always do. So same with our impaireds. We wanna meet those goals, and those goals are realistic. We look at trends through previous years, and we want to obtain something that's doable and it's achievable, so that's what we're going to try and do. There has to be a number there, there has to be some goals, and but nothing about it to me would be considered alarming.
But would you put more focus on in the upcoming year to your enforcement of impaired driving or speeding?
Like if I'm trying to outweigh what?
I mean, where is it like?
I think, to me, impaired driving is kind of something I always, you know, you take pride in getting those drivers off the road. When you process or charge someone for impaired driving, you feel a lot better at the end of the day that you did that rather than giving somebody a speeding ticket.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real here. I don't think anybody really enjoys giving tickets, but it's something that's part of our job we have to do. Whereas taking an impaired driver off the road, yeah, you probably feel a little more satisfied in the work you've done that day. So I think realistically impaired driving is something that we would focus more on.
Now, as far as goes with speeding, I mean, there's been a story recently in Nova Scotia where there was a community that reduced their speed limits to 40 kilometers per hour. Are you aware of that?
No.
Oh, right, okay. So, because my question was, would that come from the RCMP initiative, from the RCMP to reduce speed limits in communities, or where would that come from to reduce speed limits?
No, I don't. It wouldn't come from the RCMP. We don't control speed limits per se, but I think it's provincial where speed limits are set. To my knowledge, I thought since I've gotten here that there was a minimum requirement for municipalities. This is something I have to look into. I thought that it wasn't, we weren't able to decrease the speed limit below 50
in
the province.
Yeah, I think it's been like that in the past, but there has been a story recently, and I think it came from the new strategy or the new, I can't remember what it's called now, but they call it the Traffic Act now, but they're changing it to the something else right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure if it's been issued yet, but in that there was a lot of talk about reducing speed limits to 40 kilometers, and I think this is just sort of a test, but they have done it in a community in Nova Scotia, so I was just wondering, you know, where that goes, and we'll have to look into that a little bit more.
Yeah, if you
find out.
Yeah, even if you got me the name there.
That, yeah, because I mean, it seems like in our community, like in Queens County, you know, you can see you can go 90 out to White Point, right? 60, 80, 90, 70, 50 through right to Somerville. But yet and there's some places that, you know, it's 50 all the way through Brooklyn, right? Where that is the old highway.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem, you know, on the balance of it all, it doesn't make sense in certain areas. And that could be cause for confusion for people that are speeding. You know, when you're on a certain road, you think you can go a certain speed because of the distance that the houses are, you know what I mean? And there's not a lot, it's not a highly populated area and they're on all highways or whatever. So that could be confusing. I just think that overall you should reset some speed limits in the community to set the standard.
Yeah, I agree.
How it grew up in originally, how those signs or those speed limits were set.
Yes.
I have other questions for Shelley, but I can come back to me.
I'll come back.
Yeah, sure.
Councillor Fisk next.
Thank you, Dan, for the presentation today. I'm going to ask a stupid question just up for my speed. What's your speed limit when you're assisting a vehicle on the side of the road? When the RCMP are assisting a vehicle on the side of the road,
what are you slow to?
What's the speed limit when I go by an RCMP officer that has somebody held up?
Okay, I believe you have to slow on the highway.
Yeah.
I believe you have to slow till. I should know this, but I believe it's 60.
Isn't it?
So I riot. Yeah, it's 60. That's across the country, I believe. It's slow till 60.
Thank you very much. That's what I really want to know.
Yeah.
This is to Shelley. Shelley, I haven't got much to say, but you're doing a great job, I'm sure, and I'm hoping down the road that your hours of work go a little stronger, and we look forward to working with you here. You've done a fantastic job. I really appreciate your due diligence in working with seniors.
Thank you.
And I praise you high for that.
Councilor McLeod?
I just have a couple more questions. And one is, when we were discussing speeding on the highways, I often find that when there's road construction and you're held up at stop signs and then people take off and then they, because they're late for something, that's generally where the speeding takes place.
Mm.
You know, I mean, someone passed us the other day, and I know they were going 140, I mean, because it was just unreal. So I don't know whether there's any way that you know when these construction sites are happening, and if there's a way to get some type of, focus on that down the road.
Yeah, we have, to my knowledge, I don't think we've had a whole lot of highway construction in our area. I just think about my personal day-to-day, and when I'm driving back and forth to Halifax, there was quite a bit in that area, but I believe that was more Chester's area. Or
there's more coming up here in the spring.
Yeah, there will be, we don't always get notified by Department of Highways when something like that's taking place,
mm-hmm.
But it's pretty,
but they have
word travels fast, that's...
They have the reports on, you can go on their
Yeah, that is something strategic if you want it to to increase your tickets pretty quick. That'd be a good way, because I agree, that's something that does happen pretty often.
Yeah.
It's like a
And Shelley, I know that because of your work, you're now at the Queens Home Support office location, and you're also working closely with Queens Home Support as well and doing projects, and that keeps you in tune with cases that you may not be made aware of from your senior safety aspect of it, because you're attached to some files that they may have, And that's a good partnership with you. How's that working?
It's increasing my numbers, definitely. A lot of the work, a lot of my files are duplicate of theirs.
Yes.
Which I found since going there and helping them do some of their things. But the overall knowledge I'm gaining from their files to help me with mine has been wonderful. Like I've been able to go into homes of my clients that I didn't see certain things that were going on, but they're telling me when our home care workers are there, this is going on or this is happening. And so
keep you up to date on,
yeah,
on their visits as well.
That's right, yeah. And then I can go in and do that much more work for the seniors. So.
Now, when we talk about seniors in their own homes and the fact that you visit situations that are not happy situations,
mm-hmm.
most of the time, but from another perspective, do you find that there's a lot of isolation with some folks in their home? Because the trend now and focus is from the government is keeping seniors in their home longer and they're providing those services. But on the other side of that is it's causing isolation with those folks in their homes as well. So how do you deal with that, or are you focused on that as well?
I have been somewhat focused on it. Lately there's been a lot of other issues going on that I've had to deal with, so
right.
I can't really speak on recent isolation cases. It's out there for sure. There's no doubt. There's more than what I'd like to see. And hopefully in the coming months I can get out and get into some of those areas and try and help them out. And but there's an awful lot of seniors out there with no family whatsoever, which
is... Well, this is my next question. It's sad.
It is very sad.
Very sad. Or families that don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have, like, there's one case that I'm dealing with right now, which is the whole reason we talked about the adult protection.
Yeah.
And this lady... I went with adult protection on a Thursday for a visit because I had reports that there was some issues going on. When we got there, adult protection decided that she couldn't remove her from her home. There was nothing that she could do. She was safe and everything was fine. In my mind, that was the furthest thing. Like that lady needed to be removed. And adult protection, I don't know what she was looking for, but she couldn't see what I could see. The lady actually took a swing at me during the whole visit.
Wow.
And adult protection just sat there. I dealt with the lady and managed to get her calm back down, and you know, things were good. And the last thing I said to adult protection when I left was, this lady's going to wander on us, and we're either going to find her lost, or hopefully we can find her, or she's going to be dead in the woods. And I was point blank with her because that's exactly how I felt. The next day, Friday, or overnight Friday, we had rain here, but in North Queens they had freezing rain. And that lady did just exactly what I said she was going to do. She wandered that night, sometime through the middle of the night, and she managed to find a car that was unlocked a kilometer and a half down the road. Keep in mind, she only had pajamas on. That's all she had on. So we're talking, minus weather. She was freezing. She was, wet. Cold. When the people found her, she already had the hypothermia had already set in, and so the lady that found her was involved with my visit on Thursday, and so she called me right away and she said, "What am I going to do?" And I said, "Well, we got to get her to a hospital, number one." She said, "Well, how are we going to get her to the hospital?" And because of the altercation with me, the day before, she's like, "I don't think we're going to get her in an ambulance." So long story short, we managed to get her to hospital. She's in hospital now. This lady decided that she would help her out by going to her home and getting rid of all the rotten food and whatnot that was in her house because she was going to be in hospital for a while. And again, isolated. She has no family. She has, nobody that can help her out. And this is when they came across the large sum of money. And so right now, that same lady is still in the mental health ward at the hospital. And today, I'm actually going to court with them to see what they're going to do with her. But
so adult protection should have been more in line with your concerns.
Yeah. You can't look at a person for 15 minutes and decide whether they're okay or not.
Okay.
Yeah, and I had been dealing with her since October, and that was the third call into adult protection I had put on that lady, and they still wouldn't take her. But now she's in adult protection, and they're looking after things, so.
So that's a real concern, which has to be addressed.
Yeah, and it was just by luck that I came across her back in October, because, you know, no family, she lives in an isolated community, she has no, you know, has no one.
Sad situation.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which you deal with every day.
Every day.
Commissioner Kelly?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question. The last week, or last council, we had Christopher Clark in talking about the home support in the manor. And he happened to mention that your number of days work had been increased. Has there been
Senior safety, I'm 3 days a week. And then I took on a position, and it's just a, like a term type position with home support the other 2 days. So I don't know how long that's gonna last.
Oh, okay, so you work for home support for the other 2 days, but you
right
still
now
deal with the, is your
the
work
same
work
issues.
The same issues,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we are covering off helping seniors 5 days a week.
Yes.
Right, okay. All right, thank you, that's nice to know.
And the last counselor on my list today on this item is Counselor Hanson.
Okay. I'll put it into a small part. Counselor McLeod talked about with that street indicator, I'd like to get it up on West Street too, because West Street's so narrow, there's no place to walk, there's no, you got guardrails and everything there, and people are just flying through, and we're all meeting people all the time, coming together, and people on side of the road, and it's very, very difficult to do that. We've only had that speed trailer here once in the 3 years, so every time we ask for it, it's busy.
Oh, okay, okay.
And so it seems to be always busy.
I'll try to work some magic then.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because when we talk about the speed thing here, up in Lockwood, of course, it's not legal, but when they, right, you go into town and they have their sign, they said 30 kilometers an hour through all streets.
Yeah.
And it works. It works very effectively.
Yeah.
You know, it's not legal, but they abide by it. Because when you know it's 30, you only go up to 50.
Yeah, that's right.
When it's 50,
yeah,
you go up to 60 or
yeah
70. So it's very effective in that way. Two small things. The we don't have anything on about littering or anything, because we're not catching anybody. It's so hard to catch.
Mm-hmm.
But could we look at people looking on back of trucks and things for unsecured loads? Just because things that could blow off or something, if the officers would have a chance, if they see a half ton sitting around and see things laying on that could blow off, to be able to tell the people, look, that could blow off. You could it could blow off anywhere at any time. At least it gives an idea to be maybe more conscious about what they're doing with what's on back of their vehicle, not being concerned about it.
Yeah, it's something we could try and incorporate just during vehicle stops, if it's a truck or the open bed, yeah.
Yeah, they just see something, you know, just to,
yeah, for sure,
just to, I guess, let's be more conscious of what's going on around. The other thing, the Old Falls Road, we were asking about getting a report done for that, just to, you know, I know I'm getting people asking me about it again,
okay.
So has there anything been done to that at this point?
Yeah, I just recently, yesterday actually, submitted a report for that, so we'll just wait and see what comes of it, but that was just as recent as yesterday, actually, Jack, that I sent that. So,
okay.
So we'll wait and see. Just with a list of recommendations for it.
Okay, so you do have some recommendations.
Yeah, yeah, it's all in the report there that I submitted.
Excellent. So then we can be able to see what you think is being the priority.
Yeah,
that's not something we'll look at today, right? Just something we'll look at in the future. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Fancy, and thank you, Shelley and Dan, for the presentation today and answering all the questions. It's appreciated, and I expect a couple months down the road we'll do it again.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Thank
you very much.
Under 3.2, we have Duke of Edinburgh Award Program, and Troy Smith is here this morning to speak on that.
Down?
That is off. Yeah.
Oh, that is off.
Now.
Oh, there it comes.
Yeah.
we get on the big screen? Is that fine? We'll use that, that's fine. All right, so good morning, I'm Troy Smith. I live over in Brooklyn, and I run the Duke of Edinburgh Award Program for Queens County. The reason for me coming today is to share the amazing program with council and to see how we can build this program to another level for Queens County. So the Duke of Edinburgh program is an international program. It's currently in 130 countries. We have over 10 million youth that participate in it. It started in 1956 by Prince Philip. The overall part of the program, the main stuff about our program, is it's for youth that are ages 14 to 24. It's a non-competitive program, which means our program's for everybody. It's not competitive, there's no race. You can take your time, you can start when you're 14 and do one level, and only do one level if that's all you chose to do. If you wanted to do all three, you've got from 14 all the way until you hit the age of 24. It's self-directed, so that's the point of you yourself can dictate how much you want to put, how much work you put into something, how much effort you're going to put into it. It's earned and it's not won at all. So the youth that participate in the program, they're putting huge numbers, and I'm going to give you some of those stats in a little bit. In each one of the different levels that I'll explain shortly, they're putting a lot of work into achieving a bronze level, a silver level, and a gold level. And the challenges that they have to complete, they're only challenging themselves based on their ability. And that's what sets this program aside from any other program that's currently out there that would be similar to the Duke program. So we have folks, well, look provincial-wide, because we don't have any in Queens County yet. We have youth in it in Queens County, but not in this demographic. So provincially, we have youth that have either a cognitive disability, a physical disability, financial disabilities, that are all part of this program. So there are no barriers. Any person, 14, 24, can participate in this program. And it should be enjoyable. And it really is. Well, I think that it is. we'll skip that part. So the sections, each ward, so there's bronze, silver, and gold. And each one of those, there's four levels. You have to do a service, a physical activity, a skill can be something that the youth is going to now learn or build on a current skill. And then they have an adventurous journey, which is a nice term for camping, is basically what they're doing. When you hit your gold level or age 16, you have to do a gold project. We have one youth in Queens County that has completed her gold project, Ella Stevens, and it was really cool because she went from Queens County, Nova Scotia, to Ottawa, to Greenland, to Nunavut, and back on a First Nations expedition. So that's something for Queens County to really, really be proud of. So how does our community get involved in the program? We need assessors. So in Queens County, for every youth that's doing it, say we'll just use skill as an example. Our skill, we're gonna learn to play guitar. So the youth says, I want to learn how to play guitar, that's my new skill, and my goal is to learn the four major chords for guitar playing. So what we would do is connect that youth with a guitar player, like me, or anyone else in the community that plays, as their assessor. So that's going to be their mentor. They're going to help them build the goal, come up with what the youth want to do, and mentor them along the way. And when the youth has completed the required number of weeks for that service, then the assessor would then write a report saying, here's all the amazing stuff they did, here's how I feel the work that they put into it, and yes, I say that they've completed and met their goal. And then that gets sent off to myself and the other two leaders. So we want to connect as many youth to the community based on our assessors. So right now, we have assessors from, right now currently, the local MLA office. We have assessors at QCCR, because we have two youth doing two radio shows there. We have folks connected with Queens County Blades, the local gymnastics, Queens Manor, Queens County Museum, Acadia First Nations, Hank Snow Museum, and we have one youth currently doing her gold level that's doing a weekly garbage cleanup of our local beaches, and she's going to be doing that weekly for the next 52 weeks. She's gotten, I think, 6 weeks done and has collected an enormous number of black garbage bags, because when she inputs her stuff, the youth get an opportunity on their app when they upload every time they've done something, they can add photos. So I get to see all those photos and then we present them at their award. So I've seen a lot of garbage being picked up in Queens County, which is amazing. So skill, they each have to do a skill on each one of the levels, and that can be anything that they already know or anything that they want to learn, something completely new. I just finished doing the Silver Award in Halifax, and we had three youth just attend, and they were presented their silver medal from the Lieutenant Governor, and I got to hear some of the cool skills that our youth, not just here in Queens County, but provincially, that are doing, like automotive restoring was a skill that this tiny, tiny little girl, 15 years old, was in, and they had photos of her inside an old 50 Chevy restoring it. So it was a really cool skill to learn. The service is going to be the volunteer work, and I'm going to give you a stat on that because that's super impressive for Queens County. So our original five members, when we started this 3.5 years ago, are just, these are only on five youth. We have completed, these five youth completed 1,872 hours of volunteer work just in Queens County, which is equal to $21,621.30 if we were to pay them. So that's all free work right here in Queens County. And those are the places I listed off as the assessors. That's where we have youth currently here, and we've just had four more youth sign up. So just four the other day, but currently we have 12 active youth in Queens County participating. So in a year's time, those numbers are gonna go way up. Plus we're gonna have more youth connected to people in our community that they've never been connected to, or they wouldn't be connected to, because most people ages 14 and 15 are not hanging out with our MLA, are not learning that type of a career, aren't connected to the manor necessarily. So we've got youth doing things that they normally wouldn't be doing. Physical activity, huge, huge importance, especially in today's day and age with all the technology that we have. A little stat for y'all. We have, out of the five original youth, they have done 3,289 hours of physical activity. And that's only in about a three-year span, because I only calculated bronze and silver levels. And the physical activity, it can be anything. And so my role in that is to really encourage the youth to come up with some inventive ways. So it's not just, oh, I went for a walk. And it can be that simple. If that is what challenges the youth, is me getting up and going for a walk, and that's a challenge to that individual person, then that's an amazing goal to have. If doing jogging or hiking or rock climbing or whatever is a challenge, then that's the goal that youth should have, which is great. So there's lots of opportunity to do. Adventurous journey is the challenge. It's trickier for our youth here in Queens County. We have probably the best places in the province to do this. We partnered with the Harrison Lewis Center, and we run our bronze camping expedition at Harrison Lewis Center. And myself, my wife Crystal, and Officer Duffney went and took the bronze level. And we, those first original five, did 8 kilometers of hiking along cobblestone through the Harrison Lewis Center, all on that coastline. Never again. It was intense. Intense. And even for Officer Duffney, even he was struggling after a while. So it was good. But for youth, because I know the follow-up questions are generally, well, what do I do if I'm in a wheelchair and I can't do camping? Perfect. You can still challenge yourself in it. So if we have Kedgy, which is an accessible park, so we would set that youth up to go to Kedgy. And if camping is a challenge by you just getting yourself there, and we design the camping experience for that youth based upon their abilities in their wheelchair, then that's perfectly fine. Because normally what happens when you're camping, you have to go in, do either hiking, canoeing, horseback riding, sailing, whatever the case may be, and then you have to set all your gear up, and then the next day you have to take everything down and then move it to a new location. So somebody that may be in a wheelchair that can get there, get their stuff, get in, get set up, the challenge made for them is taking it all down and resetting it back up the next day, but not having to relocate to a new place. There's so many ways to look at it, and we have the best county to do it in. So bronze level, really good. I won't go into major detail. You have to be 14 years old to start the program on paper. You can sneak in, and we have some youth. You can actually start it when you're 13 and 9 months. Because you can't be, you have to hit 14 in order to actually receive your award. So we do have a bunch of youth that just started that are 13 to 9 months. The program is for the bronze is 13 weeks. And in the first level, you have to pick either skill, service, or physical activity to do for 26 weeks. So that's your major. You just do one of them as your major. The camping is 2 days, one night. You can direct entry if you're 15 and skip bronze and go right into your silver award. If you do that, you can. It's 26 weeks to do the silver award level. And if you do a direct entry, you have to do 52 weeks of either skill, service, or physical activity. Your camping is 3 days, two nights. And then your gold is a full year, 52 weeks. You cannot enter it until you're 16, regardless if you've done the previous two. Because if you did bronze and you finished when you're 14, you can go right into silver anyways. To do gold, because that's assessed at an international level when we present everything, you can't start it until you're 16. So if you do a direct entry, you do the 52 weeks, plus you have to do 78 weeks of either the skill, service, or physical activity. 4 days, three nights as you're camping. So how do we recognize our youth? Bronze. This is where we have to start to come together on. Bronze is huge. Bronze, we do the ceremony here locally. So we've only had to do one bronze level because we only had five youth and they did their bronze. And now we have another seven youth that just started their bronze level. So we're going to be looking at an awards ceremony for these new seven, probably October, November of this year. So our original bronze youth, we hosted at the Astor upstairs, did a big presentation, had food celebration for those youth, and had actually made a video of each one of them on the journey that they had to get recognized. So that's where I'll talk to that about that in a moment, for us to come together on. Silver award, you go to Province House, and you are presented that award by the Lieutenant Governor. I just went to one. It's absolutely amazing, and I apologize because I should have sent the invite out to the region, and I didn't do that because I only found out maybe 3 days before the event, and their numbers were limited on how many can come. I will make sure you're aware of when the next one is, when we have youth doing that, because each of the youth come, anyone that's finished in silver will come to the Provincial House, and they'll stand up in the middle, and the governor is standing here, and his wife is sitting here, and they present, and they go over everything that the youth has completed in order to receive that award. So it's their moment of recognition. There was probably a 4'9", 80-pound girl, and her physical activity for the year was competitive tug-of-war. And it was like, what? Never even thought of this. So there's some really cool, amazing stuff, and you get to hear about what the youth in the provincially are doing. Gold is done also in Halifax. I'm assuming it's at the governor's house, but I'm not 100% sure because we don't have anyone that's done the gold yet. And who presents that? They usually have a member of the royal party will come. If the Duke can come, then that's who's presented. And those are based on when their travel schedule happens to be here in the province. And if there's one that's close by, like say New Brunswick or PEI, Newfoundland or something, then we would send the youth to those provinces to get to receive their gold award by a member of the royal party. And if it's too long of a gap, then they'll have a designate, whoever that might be, fill in. How do I register? Not important to you folks at the moment. But before we do your amazing questions, the only one I didn't tell you about a stat was for skill, I don't think. For skills, for the five original youth, they completed 2,340 hours of learning a new skill or building upon a skill. So those are huge, huge numbers. The other thing I wanted to mention to council was we have a group coming to Kedgy from Ireland. There's 15 youth. They are doing a five-day Canadian canoe expedition. And they picked, everywhere they could pick from in the world, they picked Kedgy, which is awesome. And so those 15 youth are coming, and we're coordinating with them to bring our Duke members to them at some point. We're trying to figure out, they're on a real time crunch, but we're working on that, and then give a tour of Queens County to those youth. So we'll try to hit up like the Harrison Lewis Center for sure, where they've been so good to us, and then other key spots here in the region of Queens with those youth. So why am I actually here? Let's get to the point, right? Here we go. I am here, I'm gonna read it right off here, the only part I've written down. I'm asking for the region to promote the Duke program as a region of Queens program and to promote this on their website and social media platform. Originally, 3.5 years ago, and things got off kilter a little bit. So 3.5 years ago, myself, my wife Crystal, and our friend Cassandra had decided we're going to run this program here in Queens County. Because if you're a youth in Queens County and wanted to do the Duke program, you have to be attached to Halifax. So we had youth in North Queens that were attached to the program, but because there wasn't one currently running in Queens County, their award leader or their go-to person to try to connect them to community members is Halifax, which was near impossible because they didn't know the areas that a local person would know. And another key part with it is if we have it assigned to, say, the high school or the cadet program or North Queens School, in order for our youth in Queens County to be in the program, they have to attend either that cadet program, that high school, or that high school. And that was when we were doing the work to rule was going on. So when that went out, any school that was offering the program couldn't offer it. They weren't able to. So we wanted to come away from that. So when we did our training on to be the award leaders, we met with Connie Miller, the director of the Duke program for Nova Scotia. And she said, why don't you pitch it to the region and see if we can attach it to your municipality, have them offer the program out, because then any youth in Queens County, because we're not shutting down, so any youth in Queens County can now have a local person here. We do have a benefit because Cassandra lives in Lunenburg County, so we've stolen Lunenburg County resident to help us in Queens County because she does a lot of work down here. So by doing that, myself and Connie had met almost 4 years ago with Diana Johnson and Christopher Clark and the other CAO. So we had everything kind of set up. Everything was set up. We all had our roles. We knew what was going on. And then everybody left. And then we had new mayor, new council. Diana left. Norm had replaced her position. And then we found out after back and forth with Norm, no information was given to Norm or to Mayor David Dagley. So we're like, oh no, what has happened here? All of the work has been pushed aside. And I'm not really sure at that point if council even was aware of the program 3.5 years ago. Because the response back to us was, yes, it's been presented to council. It's all approved. We have attached it to the region. Awesome. But then it all kind of went aside when we had a big changeover. So my main reason for coming is let's get on track. Let's keep going forward if the region is still wanting to do it that way. Because if the region says, you know what, no, we're not really that interested, then I have to take all those youth, which is fine. Well, it's unfortunate. But then I have no choice but to attach them back to Halifax. Because we have to have it attached to something in our county. The other thing that I'm asking is if council would commit $300 annually for the bronze level celebration only, and any monies that's not used for that, if I can use it for camping equipment. I was fortunate enough to get $1,200 grant from the wellness grant from the health, what's it called? The
Community Health Board.
Thank you, the Community Health Board. They donated $1,200 to our program, and with the amazing donations from Liverpool Outdoor Adventures, they were able to find us some very good quality camping gear, and we were able to get two complete sets of camping equipment, like the packs, the tents, the cooking equipment, the propane kind of things. Everything that any two people would need can come and borrow it from us and use it to do their expedition, because that's the biggest financial barrier is the camping part. So any monies that would be left over from that $300, I would use to update and continue to grow the camping equipment, because right now that's on loan already. It's booked for the whole summer from the youth that are going to be using it this summer. And two sets of gear isn't quite enough. The celebration, I think that the celebration part should be it should be big. It should be like we do when we do events at the Amir Center. These are our youth, and we have to invest in them in our county. We've got them. Like, you look at Ellis Stevens, it's just represented Queens County all the way in Nunavut. We have youth that are going to be doing a gold project at some point. When they do their gold project, they go and put themselves in a group of people that aren't of their normal peers. So we've got youth that are, unfortunately, we're going to go to Japan on hold, but they will be doing their Japan trip next year, who are therefore representing the Duke program here, the Queens chapter. So it's big, it's huge. And I think they should be recognized for it. And then the last part is, I'm just asking for the region to offer some sort of congratulations to the youth at the other two levels. So I'm not asking for the region to put on a celebration when you do silver and you do gold, because that's taken care of by the province. But I think that we should acknowledge the accomplishments that they do at each one of the levels. We just had the youth get their award at the silver level, and we didn't do anything as a region. We didn't send anything out. It was shared by our local MLA, and then a few of the counselors were able to share that based off of what they saw on social media. But the region of Queens itself, I think we're missing an opportunity. We really should be highlighting those hours. That's a lot of volunteer hours. $21,000 worth of work off of five youth. It's a lot. It's a big number. So that's all I had to say about the program. If you got any questions, fire them away.
Well, I have one initial comment.
Yeah.
I want to thank you today, Troy. It is a very good program, and certainly something that I'm expecting the region can support. I would suggest that we can connect you with staff and do the preliminary discussions and work this out to see what we can bring back actually to council.
Yeah.
As a result.
So right.
With that, I would ask councilors who may have a question. And Councilor Fiskus first.
What energy. Just enjoyed your energy so
thank
much.
You.
What I really appreciate is when you spoke, you brought all of the region of Queens and you brought the whole county in.
Yeah, we got it. Absolutely.
No, you did. You recognized the whole aspect of the county. I totally appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Just keep doing the good work, and the youth will come, and I'm
sure. Our focus this year is North Queens. We don't have youth in North Queens. They were attached to the North Queens school.
Yes.
So when the teacher had retired or left, I'm not sure which case, because it ended before I was here, they automatically got attached to Halifax. And what happened, we had a youth that was in her gold level, never completed it because she couldn't have the support because it wasn't close enough for her.
What I appreciate today is that you did touch base on all the areas of Queens.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
very important. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Councilor McLeod?
Well, Troy, I'll tell you, enthusiasm is contagious. It really is. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Do you volunteer all of this?
Yeah, so all of my stuff and Crystal's and Cassandra's is all volunteer 100%. So we travel throughout our county. We set up the training. So when the youth are going to do their expedition stuff, there's three stages. I mean, I didn't go over those slides, but
sure.
What happens is they have to do a planning, and there's 15 things that they have to do to show that they're safe enough to go. So we run those. So what we end up doing is connecting, like Jamie Brown, for example, is going to come. We're going to connect with the Mr. Luchner and run like the orienteering, map reading, how you, and also get Glenn from obviously Parlees to come and do that component. And then we do that part of it, and then we also help coordinate the actual expedition for bronze. We don't do any of the actual planning of it. We just find the location for the youth, provide them the materials, because they have to 100% do, they have to plan it, they have to submit route cards, they have to submit a gear plan, a safety plan, and they have to demonstrate that if they're doing a canoeing trip, that you're qualified enough to be in a canoe with someone else. So, no, that's all volunteer stuff that we do with that program.
So hopefully once you get your discussions with staff and the recommendation comes back to us, I have, you know, really great confidence in our leaders and our decision makers that you will certainly get somewhere with that. And
because I think we can grow the number. We can grow it. 12 is a small number for Queens County. I was hoping to be at 50, and I don't think there's any reason we can't have 50 youth in Queens County between the two, between this area and North Queens that aren't in this program right now. Because all our youth are doing most of the stuff. We just need to get them the credit and let them realize, holy man, you're really doing something amazing for the community.
Years ago when I worked for the cable company, I did an interview with one of the leaders from the province on the introducing the program. And from that point to this point, I've never heard so much involvement as what you've presented today. So you've really brought it alive, and that's really good for
that's
all
good.
Of us.
Good.
Including the youth are the target.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we really need that inspiration and that, you know, for them to get involved.
Yeah.
And it's great for themselves in the future on their resumes as well. Any of that stuff is wonderful.
If you put the Duke, that you did the Duke program on your resume, you're pretty much guaranteed an interview at most places. You also get a credit. So if you do your bronze, silver, and gold levels every year that you're in grade 10, 11, and 12, you can have an extra, I think it's called a developmental credit. I'm not sure. They keep changing it, but they can get an extra credit, and it opens up opportunities for scholarship money when they go to post-secondary.
So are youth at school made aware of that?
Yeah, all any youth, the 12 youth that we have involved get all the information. When they do their level, they get an actual letter right from head office that says, bring this to your guidance counselor so you can get credit for your stuff. And then we walk them through it.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Stephanie Marichelli?
Hey, Troy.
Hello.
So I was going to ask about your challenges, and I know obviously one of them is getting support from the region of Queens and getting it recognized for exactly what it is and getting it out there. But is your challenge through you yourself, like you, Crystal, as volunteers, being able to handle a certain amount of students or getting the word out and getting them to sign up? What's your challenge there?
So my challenge has nothing to do with numbers. It wouldn't matter if there's 1,000. We could totally do that. That's not an issue there. Because it's not so much I have to do a lot. I go through everything they do is it's all via an app or online. So they input all their stuff. I go through once a week and make sure every one of the youth are entering the stuff they need because they have to log something every week. So if a youth does 4 hours worth of volunteer work, they enter 4 hours and they only get 1 week's credit. They think they're going to get 4 hours, but they only get 1 week because it's about putting the work into something, not how fast I can get through it. So any youth that has missed 2 weeks in a row, I'm already on the phone, or Cassandra or Crystal on the phone contacting that youth to say, oh no, do you need help? Is there something you've missed? No, I was on vacation. And then they can go back and backlog. Handling isn't the issue. Promotion is probably the biggest one because all of the youth that we have are ones I know. Simply, that would be they're my children's friends. So we were able to get them in that way. So that's why we're seeing a big jump right now, because my daughter Ava has started. So her crew of friends are now turning 14. So we'll see that number probably jump to 17 youth by summertime easily. So it'd be, for me, the biggest struggle is getting it promoted, because when I wrote the original, when we called it the Region of Queens Duke of Edinburgh program, people are thinking of two different things, unfortunately, now. Originally, it was the region's program, and we just run it for you. But the community is now thinking it's called the Region of Queens program because you're running a program in the Region of Queens, but it's not attached to here. So how do we solve it or come up with strategies? I think we just need to have information here, link it to the page, so when you click on recreation, there's a website that goes with all the Duke's information, and then there's another hyperlink that takes them right straight to the Nova Scotia page and our information. And then they can then come direct the questions to the three leaders and not to this building.
Okay. So the promotion then is in the schools and in these age groups. Why aren't they
It's a complicated program to understand.
Right, okay.
It really is complicated to understand until you get to sit down with the youth and show. Usually I would show a video of the youth that we have doing and what they've done, not so much this type of presentation. The work to rule killed it. It really, as much as people get upset about it, it really killed the program because we had more involved, but all of our assessors were the teachers. And when the work to rule had happened, they couldn't assess the youth. So then the youth got upset thinking, oh, well, I'm not that important to you. And it was bigger than what the youth could understand at the time. So we really connecting our youth with community members, not so much their teacher, because then their assessors are readily available, regardless of where they are.
Well, it's an amazing program, and your energy is amazing. So I'm sure that we'll be able to
come together
and create something that propels them.
Councilor Johnson?
For your enthusiasm, it's contagious.
Nice.
I can see why the kids would jump on board. And, but just to follow up on the challenges, one of the things I see here on the slide to get started is a $50 fee to get them started. And then is there other financial constraints that may fall in line going forward for these students who...
So that $50 fee is a pain. It should never have been there. And originally it was $30. And then this coming year, head office had changed it to $50, which it is a huge... It's a big barrier for a lot of youth, especially the youth that I want to target. The youth that we have in the program, that is not a barrier for them. The youth that I want in this program, that's a barrier for them. And no youth will be denied the program. If they don't have the money to enter it, then we either find a community member that will offset it, or head office will say, no, it's fine. So no one will ever be turned away from the program, ever. The only person that would know that it's being covered would be me, because it's all done online. But no one wants to ask, right? Who wants to ask, I can't afford $50 because it's embarrassing to me? So I do understand that, especially for my type of work, that is a massive barrier. It could be something that maybe the region or council, like when we're sitting discussing, to see if we can put a budget line to look at offsetting costs when need it. I know most people in this community, so I kind of know when people are signing up or who I'm talking to. That might be a barrier that we can look at alleviating that issue for some of our youth. But it is. The reason why they changed it is because they came up with an app to do everything. Before it was all on paper. So they're trying to offset some costs because it's international. So the app costs a lot of money because it's the same regardless of what country you're living in. The material, they're getting away from all the printed material, so now everything is all online. So it's all, they're trying to recoup those costs is the explanation I was given.
Other than that, is there anything I can do to help connect the dots for the North Queens community?
Yeah.
You've got to connect with the school.
Absolutely.
For the community organizations, like I noticed you mentioned something about the camping materials, like Cody Wynot and the Outfitters there at Kedgy.
Yep.
They have kits already set up, pre-camping kits for people who want to experience it for the first time. So
yeah, exactly.
If we can touch some of those buttons, but I'll give you my contact.
Yeah, for sure.
To help you call.
Excellent, thank you.
Councilor Fancy?
Yes, Troy, it's hard keeping up with you. I'm getting older, and so you put a lot of information out there, and it doesn't always sink in.
Yeah, no, there's a lot.
Probably I'll get home this afternoon and think of something you said. But a couple different things. First off, do you have cards that you could give us out so we could be able to contact you for any reason? Because I don't want to walk away from here and say, who was that? That was Troy. Yeah, well, Troy, what was his last name?
I have my work card, but I don't have a card that's designated for this. They have never given us one. I mean, I can send out an email to all of you with my contact if you're looking for information. The other way to connect is if you do go to the first link, the Duke of Ed, not the second one,
right.
But the dukeofed.org/NS.
Right.
All the information about the program is there. There's presentations on there. And then it'll link you to my information also, is what I'm told. Supposedly.
Okay.
But yeah, I will send them an email.
All
for sure.
Okay. One other, I'm just taking one little portion of it.
Yep.
You talked about the youth that were cleaning up the beaches.
Yeah.
The garbage and such. We have a litter abatement group, and if you send any information like that, and we can we can put pictures out there for you.
Yeah, sure.
And tell them what they're doing and be able to give more recognition to the youth.
Yeah, I can do that.
For what we could do. So you could either send it to the Queen's County Litter Abatement Group, or just send it to me and I'll post them out there. So
excellent. I'll get some photos from
them. We want to give them all the kudos for everything they're doing, because a lot of times it just gets, well, they did this, well, who knew?
Yeah, I want to post the photos too, because it's a lot of garbage. It shouldn't be there.
Absolutely.
It's not fishing gear. Well, I mean, there's a good portion fishing gear, but it's people eating their McDonald's and leaving it on the beach. It's a lot of just garbage. It's good self-awareness.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's good for them for self-esteem.
Yeah. You know,
it's all about self-esteem. For some of these people, I may not be great at this, may not be great at that, but I can be able to do this.
Right.
And you can find something you can do.
No, definitely. Yeah.
I appreciate all of what you do.
Yeah, thank you.
Councilor Crowley?